morning, Mr. McDonald, Mr. Forden. I'd like to thank you for your interest in the inquiries and for your appearance at today's hearing. The purpose of this hearing is to assist Professor Taryn Weeramanthi in gathering evidence for the Climate Health WA inquiry in the impact of climate change on health in Western Australia. My name is Dr. Sarah Joyce, and I'm the Project Director for the inquiry. To my right is Dr. Rebel Bangor-Jones, the Public Health Advisor for the inquiry. I've been instructed by Professor Weeramanthi under Section 230 of the Public Health Act 2016 to conduct today's hearing. Please be aware that the use of mobile phones and other recording devices is not permitted in this room, and please make sure that your phone is silent and switched off. This hearing is a formal procedure convened under Section 231 of the Public Health Act 2016. While you are not being asked to give your evidence under oath or affirmation, it is important you understand that there are penalties under the Act for knowingly providing a response or information that is false or misleading. This is a public hearing, and a transcript of your evidence will be made for the public record. If you wish to make a confidential statement during today's proceedings, you should request that part of your evidence be taken in private. You have previously been provided with the inquiry's terms of reference and information on giving evidence to the inquiry. Before we begin, do you have any questions about today's hearing?
No.
For the transcript, could I ask each of you to state your name and the capacity in which you are here today? And could I also ask that throughout the hearing you briefly state your name before replying?
Rob McDonald, Board Chair, South Metro Health Service.
I'm Paul Forden, Chief Executive of South Metropolitan Health Service.
Thank you. Would you like to make a brief opening statement on behalf of South Metropolitan Health Service?
Look, only to say that we've been keen to do what we can in terms of trying to improve the environment in which we run our services. We've had a proactive program, but we also recognise we're limited by what we can do on our own.
Thank you. As you're both probably aware, establishment of this Climate Health WA inquiry was a specific recommendation of the Sustainable Health Review, which also made separate recommendations for the health system to reduce its environmental footprint as a matter of priority and begin transparent public reporting on its footprint by July 2020. Can I ask, how do you see the issue of climate change connecting to ideas of sustainability more broadly? And is there a window of opportunity for the health sector to progress more quickly in this area than previously?
Well, I could both answer this at the same time. Paul's responsible for the operational aspects of South Metro, so it will probably work well, I think, if Paul goes first, and then I can add in at the end.
Okay, so we all recognise the need for the Sustainable Health Review, that was really important. Sustainability is not just financial sustainability, it's also sustainability of services, which would include ability to employ staff, it would be include our ability to serve the needs of the patients, to meet their needs, etc. But we also recognise the sustainability of the planet, and that's a growing recognition, and I think every time you turn on a news program, you can actually hear something about it. We've seen the impact of the social movement around this. And we actually have about 7,100 employees, but that's FTE. So if you turn that into people, into souls, we've probably got over 11, 12,000 individuals working for us. And so they're also not only our workforce, they're also part of the community, they're part of our kind of neighbourhood. They are as much keen as is the organisation itself to try and do what we can around the environment. And that's the way we're tackling it. So we also, though, believe that it has to be more than just a social movement or more than just one organisation trying to make a difference. There is an absolute need for joined up planning and policy in this regard. So happy to take more specific questions if that helps.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McDonald, did you even think you wanted to add?
I think if you put it into the context of where the health service providers are now, you'd be aware the health service is at. We've put into place about three 3.5 years ago. We were formed as independent authorities in our own right. So there are five HSPs, of which we are one. There has been a sizable amount of work is being carried out as the independent authorities have been put into place. We have a number of issues, as you know, patients, increasing patient numbers and all that kind of things are occurring. This is one that I'm pleased, as head of the organisation, when we look at, you know, Paul can run through some of the specific things we've put into place, where we've recognised our responsibility as appropriate corporate citizens. And that's not to say we're doing everything that we'd like to. The availability of resources is a concern for us. But we're fortunate with Fiona Stanley Hospital, which is the most modern and probably, you know, most complex and complicated hospital in Western Australia, comes under us as well. And we've been fortunate, we've been able to put into place, you know, various things. Paul can run through those things if you'd like to hear them. Clearly, we could like to carry out more, as we'd like to in all things, but it comes down to the available resources and that type of thing.
Thank you. Mr. Borden, the inquiry is very keen to hear exemplars of good practice, so if you wouldn't mind running through some of the initiatives that our Metropolitan Health Centre...
So, a lot of this is... first thing is, as Mr. McDonald said, we're fortunate. We have five hospitals. So we've got Fiona Stanley, we've got Fremantle, which is a much older facility. We have Rockingham further south. Further south than that, we've actually got Peel, whilst it's run by Ramsay on our behalf. It's still our facility with our responsibility for the infrastructure. And then we've got the small Pinjarra Hospital, Murray District. The way we look at what we can do as an organisation, we've probably categorised it in three areas. So we've got something which we would term utilities. So that would be water, electricity, gas usage, etc. The efficient use of that and ensuring that it's used as productively as possible. In that regard, some of that is largely out with our control. So if you understand, it is a more modern building. It has more efficient air conditioning. It has more efficient wiring, use of electricity, more modern gas plants, etc. So we're very fortunate in that regard. However, we also have facilities such as Fremantle, which is only 8 kilometres down the road, which is a facility which has been built up probably over 100 years. It's the different blocks have been done at different decades. So they're all lettered A, B, C, D, E, block F, G, H, and I think we've even got a double T on it somewhere. So there's obviously a lot of money 1 year. They put it. But the efficiency of that plant, the efficiency of that building are pretty dire. That's not something we can change on our own right, and clearly that goes in for capital submissions. Rockingham, which is a probably more modern building than Fremantle, but is certainly not as modern as Fiona Stanley, has some aspects of good environmental design, but actually is still quite aged when you compare what technologies and market is available now. Move down to Peel, and again, that's probably similar to Rockingham. Again, it's had an extension. And again, a facility which isn't as poorly designed as necessarily Fremantle is, but certainly would not benefit from the technologies we know we could use now, or the design we know now. And then Murray, which is just a very, very aged facility. So we categorise ourselves around that utilities kind of part. The second approach we take is what I'd call products. Now, product, we use a considerable amount of consumables every year in our hospital facilities. And when we talk about products, we talk about all from sourcing, so whether it's got local provenance, how it's delivered, the frequency of deliveries, the way it's wrapped, whether it's usable or reusable, whether it's recyclable or non-recyclable, how we collect it for waste. We also use standards of usage. So, for example, if we're doing a major burns procedure, you might use packs to try and support pad around the patient. We have initiatives to try to make sure we only open what we're going to use. In the older days, maybe people might have just opened things ready just in case. So around the environment usage, we've got our teams have moved towards, right, let's be really sensible. and choose wisely and only use what we actually are going to use. So we've got a lot of initiatives around that area. So the whole product domain. And then the final bit, and it's something that I think we don't always think about, is actually the impact of the hospitals actually on the geography. So we have something like 600,000 to 700,000 outpatient visits a year. Those people drive or get trains or buses to our environment. So there's a huge amount of carbon usage in just people accessing our services and getting to our sites. So that's another area where we're very much looking at. There is a term called telemedicine. I think it's probably inappropriate for where we're talking about going with outpatients, which is more of a digital consultation. So we've got initiatives just starting to see how we can actually reduce the amount of visits made by patients who don't necessarily have to come in for an outpatient clinic, and maybe it could be done in a different form. And I know that's one of the recommendations of Sustainable Health Review. They suggest maybe 60%. We know 80% of patients who come into an outpatient don't have physical contact, but that does not mean to say they can actually do that through a digital form. Whether 60% is right or wrong, at least it gives us a target and a challenge. So I think that's the three areas we focus on. So with the utilities, we're very much driven by trying to remind staff of the need to use utilities efficiently and not waste them. We have a lot of communications in our organization around that. Would I like to do more? Absolutely. Obviously, my accent is not local. I come from England, which is a much colder climate. I've got a thatched house there, and I actually have solar panels, and I generate more electricity off that house than I actually purchase from the grid. I actually put more back into the grid. And the use of solar and other modern technologies, I think, is a big opportunity for us. But that would require government policy and investment. That's not something we are given the money for. I get two forms of budget a year. One is operational, that pays for salaries, drugs, dressings, consumables. The other part is capital, and capital is very, very constrained, and that's something that we have very little leeway over. In terms of the hospital as a footprint, as I said, we're just starting pilots in immunology, neurology, and a number of other areas where we can move more from telemedicine into how we look after our metro patients. So telemedicine is largely looking after country patients. Digital outpatients is how we actually look after metro patients to try and reduce their number of visits they make. But we are also trying to reduce the number of follow-up clinics people have, for example. So a patient might come in for an outpatient, the initial consultation will diagnose the treatment regime, they may have a surgery, and then they'll come in for a number of follow-ups. What we're trying to do is reduce the number of follow-ups, again, to reduce the impact, not only on our services, but actually on the footprint, the carbon footprint. And then in terms of product usage, I've mentioned we've done a lot of work around choosing wisely. We are trying to source goods that are as much created locally as we can. We are governed largely by the health support services contracts, because they do the majority of the procurements around those. But where we contract ourselves, we try to source locally. We try to make sure that we are clear with staff of the products to purchase. So if I give you a very simple example on the health service suppliers product list, there are two types of toothpaste. We provide toothpaste to a number of our patients who don't bring it with them, maybe through an emergency situation or something. And you have a large tube and a small tube. So we're actually encouraging people just to use a small tube, because actually a lot of the rest is just wastage. So there are things like that. We've also moved towards the Green Theatres Group in Fiona Stanley Hospital. So Green Theatres Group, very much looking again at the use of consumables and products. Where they can, they're moving more towards reusable or recyclable. Reusable is not very easy in the health space because of infection control, so you'd be aware of that. So we actually have to balance off infection risk with the ability to reuse. But where we can do, we can try to get towards recyclable. So that's where we're trying to move that. The State Rehab Service has a war on waste. They've got a number of reuse initiatives they're running. The contract management, as I said, has changed, for example, medication cups into ones that are disposable, whereas before they would have been plastic and just thrown away, which is something we're all against. We've got some small initiatives, which, whilst they might sound small, I think are really important to show that the organisation is behind staff on the social movement. Largely, I can send out emails, and I'd love to think everyone reads them all and obeys them all, but I'm probably realistic to realise in my old age that doesn't happen. So what we're trying to generate around this is much more a social movement where we get staff wanting to make a change, and that's where we've had the biggest impact so far. So, for example, we in Fremantle Hospital, we've got no plastic straws at all, so we just abandoned those. They've also got spoons that have been replaced by wooden spatulas for stirring cups, etc. Small things, but things that people recognise make a difference. If I go across to Rockingham, they've also changed the way they use straws. They've changed the way they're using reusable cups. They incentivise people to bring their own cups to the coffee shops. We do it across, across all of our areas using keep cups. We've actually got bio cups on the wards in a number of areas now as well. So there are a range of initiatives we're doing. One of the bigger ones, which created a bit of controversy, is everyone has a bin under their desk in the administration functions across all the hospitals. Those bins contain a plastic bag. Those bin bags were emptied every day. Those bins are now no longer there. So everyone has had all the bins removed. The initial outcry was, wow, we've now got to go to the end of the office to actually get rid of our disposables. A, it's healthier for you to have to walk sometimes. B, as soon as we said, though, we're actually reducing plastic bags, the message was through. And the acceptance was straight away by every single person who works for us. So we saved something like, I think it's 85,000 plastic bags a year, just in the admin functions, by taking those bins away.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And it's great to hear about the different initiatives both across the clinical areas but also the administrative areas, as well as some of the barriers that you've faced with trying to implement other initiatives. That's very helpful for us.
I think, Paul, I think you mentioned it well, so I won't run through any of the other ones again. I think, you know, as we've said before, the size of hospitals is considerable. So at Fiona Stanley, any one weekday, we'd have more than 10,000 people on site. So if you take employees, you take our facilities management people, our patients, their family, their care, all that kind of thing. So it is big. So some of the stuff that Paul's run through, whilst they seem minor, when you take the size of the hospital, it is considerable. We've, as you can see, we've put a large number of things in place. We'd like to reflect what the community thinks and so forth. People are passionate on some stuff. Some of the stuff Paul ran through on utilities and that type of thing, we cannot really achieve much on our own. So for the inquiry that's going on, you know, we would, you know, we'd really welcome some initiatives that would help us to be able to make investment payback over for a period of time, because, you know, clearly if possible, with the pressures on the health system that we've all seen, it's very hard for us, you know, to free up cash and that type of stuff. So we would welcome innovative thoughts from you to help the minister consider, you know, what options are available as such. I mean, the utilities is considerable. Running a hospital, I don't know if you've gone past, you would have gone past hospitals, you can just see it at night time just with the lights on. So we use considerable, you know, power, energy and all those types of stuff. And we think we can achieve, you know, savings in it, but we can't fund it at this point in time. So if there was an investment option going forward, paying back, we'd like to participate in that, knowing the business cases we put forward would need to be robust. And that's fair enough.
And I think I can say that that's been a fairly common theme that's been from the but I can assure you that we are talking to finance and procurement and other stakeholders that would need to be engaged for a change in that area.
So I actually worked in Treasury for 6 years, so I've been on the other side of the coin. So I understand how government works and doing all that type of stuff. And I just think for us, as for the the hospitals as well. If ever you've been through FSH, if you understand that, I don't know if you've gone through, if you understand, compare Fiona Stanley with your raw person, all that, and you can see the advantage of modern tech.
Mm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, come away. Okay. The Minister for Health, I know, wrote to the health service providers in April this year encouraging membership of the Global Green Healthy Hospitals Network. So this network is an international community of hospitals and health services dedicated to reducing their ecological footprint. To join an organisation needs to send a letter of intent indicating support for the Global Green Healthy Hospital agenda and or a commitment towards 2 of 10 sustainability goals. Have you been able to engage with the Global Green Healthy Hospital Network and its agenda since then?
Yeah, we're members.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Members.
Are you able to identify which of the sustainability goals your government
focuses on? I don't know if I've actually got that with me, so I may need to, if you want that taken on notice, that would probably be easier.
Yeah. I'll
look through my notes quickly. But we're an active part. We joined very quickly. Maybe I'll just take that on notice and feed that back to you, if that helps.
Yes.
If you want that.
That's fine. Thank you. We also read in your submission that South Metropolitan Health Services recently released a sustainability framework.
Yep.
Could you outline the process of consultation that led to the framework, how you developed the specific goals and implementation criteria, and how you intend to use and evaluate the framework?
So we engage, we always engage as much as possible both our staff and other agencies when we develop initiatives. So that's exactly what we did here. We actually had a community engagement program as well as a staff engagement program. Where we're up to now is actually taking that further and trying to start an organizational movement. So as I said, we've got a number of people, whether it's the Green Theatre Group, the State Rehab Group, the Rockingham Ward Group. What we're trying to do is organize a structure. So we've actually got an overarching steering group, which will again include community members as well as leading staff advocates. And then below that, we'll actually end up with a group of reps from every single area in the organizations. So that's all 5 hospitals. They will be there to both drive initiatives, but also to share best practice. And I think that's really important.
Thank you. Just moving on, obviously we spoke a little bit before about collaboration and the need to collaborate across the sector.
Mm.
What role do you see the Department of Health playing in supporting health service providers?
So I think there's several factors on this. One is at a policy level. Okay. Some of our policies actually don't help us and move us away from a sustainable environment. So I take a very simple one. There is a limit on the number of pool cars. So one of the policies could be moving towards electric vehicles, for example. But actually, by limiting the number of pool cars, means patients have to come to me rather than one of my members of staff can do several visits in one day. So there are a number of initiatives we're driving where we want to move clinical services towards the community. So is it more efficient for one member of staff to maybe visit 8 homes or maybe 3 community areas and see a multitude of patients? Or is it more efficient to get every single one of those patients to use the carbon to drive into us? So I think we need to think deeply about our policies and on each one review and say, actually, does it move us now where we want to get towards? They were set up for previous goals. So take the pool car one. The goal was to try to reduce the number of people who were driving around in cars and reduce expenditure. That was the purpose of it. But is that the overarching goal still? Or is it actually to have a bigger impact on the footprint? So I think there's a policy role. I think there is one around an asset investment plan. We've spoken about the facilities, the buildings themselves and the design of the buildings. Just as importantly is actually the assets and their both the ability to ensure they're well-maintained and serviced at appropriate times, but also replaced when appropriate. Technologies are changing, not only in the manufacturing industry, not only in the domestic environment, but also in the healthcare environment. using assets that are maybe 10, 15 years old might not be as environmentally friendly as using ones designed now. And if you take even a lot of our diagnostic equipment, the amount of power they use to generate an MRI to do a CT, older ones use more power. So again, it's making sure that we are, if we're committed to this, it means you actually have to really put some skin in the game. And you have to replace assets when they're supposed to be replaced and replace them with ones that are more more environmentally friendly. So I think there is a role in that as well. There is a danger, though. What we do is we just have a planning to plan kind of regime, and I'd hate to see that. And something also that becomes a bureaucracy around reporting. I think reporting is important, but it has to be kept in balance. There is a danger we actually use more resources on reporting than we actually do in terms of making a difference. So I'd encourage a kind of balanced approach around that.
So one just point that I would make, it's always when we talk about at policy level, how can health help us? And I think when you look at the Health Services Act when it came in, it very much made the HSPs independent in their own right. And I'm probably known, I won't say Paul as well because that's not fair, I'm known as a radical a bit just in terms of that I believe the Department of Health should keep out of what the HSPs are up to, that they should set what we need to accomplish. We should have the autonomy to put it in, but we should be held completely accountable for what we need to accomplish. Now, we've got a range of things. We've got a service level agreement with the Department of Health, a service level agreement with the Mental Health Care Mission. We've got a whole range of policies. We were talking the other day at Turner's Downey Hospital, we've got 3,000. So I start at 3,000 and such. And I think in these modern times, if I can use that phrase, agencies like South Metro Health and the other HSPs need to be actually let or be allowed to work and accomplish stuff. The first reaction when things come in like this is to put more policies in. And it actually ties us down in terms of having to report on it, in terms of all these various things are put into place. And I would just encourage the inquiry to think about in terms of how it can be achieved, given that HSPs, like I said, have got so much on. We can sit here and tell you figures all day long. We get more than 200,000 through our EDs. We're monitored. We must get, at least 90% of the patients out of our EDs within 4 hours or such. We've got everything around that and a whole range of other things. And all these other policies, and we must report on things. I think the time's coming when they really need to say, well, the HSPs, the boards have been put into place, C is in place. We recruited Paul from the UK because of the experience he's had, and he's already run through his house, but he didn't actually run through all the experience he had in hospitals from that. So we have a large number of experience in that. So by all means, set the targets, have clear expectations, ensure we have transparent reporting and hold us accountable, but we need the autonomy to be able to put these things into place. And my fear is the inquiry comes in, everyone concurs, it is an important thing, the world needs it, we all agree, but please don't tie us down in reporting. So we'll be spending all the time on reporting and not much time proactively in the things. You've seen all these minor things we've put into place. Paul didn't cover one of them, that our facilities manager, Serco at Fiona Stanley, bought 1,000 kit cups for the food hall. And they went like that. And see people all walking around with all the kit cups. Now, the number of coffee cups that saved, being thrown out of time is considerable. So we're doing all these things on our own with the help of our people and all that type of stuff. And we can achieve more. We can achieve more ourselves, which we are going through. We can achieve more if resourcing is provided to us, but we need to be allowed to get on just with it.
Thank you. I might address the next question then to you, Mr. McDonald, because it relates to the board specifically. At a strategic level, has this issue been discussed at a board level or identified in risk assessments included in asset valuations, capital, or other planning processes?
So the board has sub-committees in place. One of them is the People, Culture and Engagement CERS Committee, and they are brief on an ad hoc basis as needed on the progress of the programs. So the programs that's pulled runs through, the subcommittee is informed on those and discuss how they're going. This SMHS sustainability framework is very clearly covered in the South Metro Operational Plan. And it's important because we want the framework to align to the strategic plan. One of the things that we've been very keen on in South Metro is that when we put our strategic plan into place 2 to 3 years ago, it came before the Sustainable Health Review. And people's, the word was you should wait. We said, well, we really can't afford to wait. So we want to have a strategic plan which was overarching, picking up all these things. And the SHR, we're meeting in a couple of weeks' time, we'll just pick up a couple of points. We've covered virtually all the points of the SHR. And the SHR, we virtually knew, what it was, covering and so forth. There are some issues we need to increase our importance on and that type of stuff. But this is one in which the board has picked up, covers through our People, Culture and Engagement, as I said, but also it's been covered off through our strategic plan, the sustainability framework, and so forth.
Well, thank you.
Just in terms of the assets, the board is totally across the asset register. It knows when items need to be replaced, etc. I think the limiting factor we mentioned already is capital.
Thank you.
It really depends how innovative and the inquiry wants to be, I suppose, because you've got willing partners.
Always good to hear. Thank you. We mentioned data before in a bit around the need for any sort of reporting and monitoring to be meaningful to health service providers and not just for the sake of it. If some form of carbon accounting is introduced, do you think it could also be used not just to establish a baseline so health service providers can see improvements going forward, but also to identify particular hotspots for targeted action?
The jury's out. I don't think we're as advanced as we want to be across the world on carbon accounting. I think there is more work to be done before it's rolled out at the moment. I think if we're going to roll it out, we need to make sure it's a practical, informative process and not just something we're doing because there is a term called carbon accounting, etc. So I think I'm not sure we're there yet. I think there's a lot more work to be done. And it might be better starting at a government agency level, maybe at health level first, before we try to push it down. Because if it's pushed down to me to SMARS, the only way I can do it is actually to push it down further into my organisation. And this is where I'm saying we could end up with a massive reporting regime and a way of trying to calculate what we've got to report every month. And it actually generates more energy than actually it saves. So I'm just a little bit nervous at the moment. I'm not against it. I'm absolutely into transparency. I think a more practical way at the moment might be reporting on schemes. Not targeted schemes, but just getting everyone just to be more transparent. We have part of our website portal is where the public can see what we're doing in terms of our schemes, etc. And I think there should be more of that, maybe, so people can learn from each other and encourage each other with healthy competition.
I share Paul's nervousness. I'm a CPA as well, amongst the various other things. And I think systems that we need to have in place are very important. And very much, I think, as we've covered before, that we see when information is asked to be provided and so forth, and it should be provided, but in some cases the systems are not really contemporary, and so there's a lot of time is put in to find the info, collate the info, make sure the info's right, and send it out. And so for carbon accounting, it's not actually the issue itself, it's the systems and so forth that need to work too. Because if we spend more time on that, we're taking resource away from other areas in our hospitals.
Thank you. You mentioned previously around staff expectations and how that has driven a lot of the activity within South Metropolitan Health Service, and particularly with 11,000 to 12,000 staff. Do you have any comment on patient expectations of health services with respect to reducing emissions and environmental waste? Have you seen that change over time?
I wouldn't categorise it as patients. I think it's a public expectation is a more important one. To be honest, if somebody becomes ill, their primary focus is on us trying to improve their health. They might have all sorts of other things going through their mind at the time, but predominantly they're focused on their wellness. So I think it's a public expectation. And I think the public expectation is something we see day in, day out. As I said, you see it in the media, you see it in social media. Our staff, though, are also members of the public. And that's why I said the social movement, because actually they're not tackling this thinking as a doctor or a nurse or an allied health or an administration. They're thinking about members of the planet. And that's why it's so powerful for us.
If you take, as Paul said before, we have more than 10,000 employees, we take their families, we take their friends and all that type of stuff. You take patients, you take their families, all that type of stuff. You know, hospitals and health services have large cohorts. And South Metro footprint covers about 680,000 people, Paul, or something,
yeah.
In South Metro. So we are very important. And we take our responsibilities in this seriously, and we're happy to be held accountable.
Thank you. Just noting the time, one last question. Do you think that acting on climate and environmental risk could also be an opportunity to realise financial savings, improve patient safety and quality of care, and benefit the health of the population?
So there will be some tensions, but there will be some opportunities. I'd love to think that focusing on climate change will be a panacea to healthier outcomes, reduce financial costs and everything else. It won't necessarily always be that way. Sometimes there will be a bigger cost to save the planet in terms of inconvenience and other things. But there are undoubtedly areas where there are definite benefits. I mentioned earlier, for example, in the Burns Theatre, by choosing wisely around opening packs, etc. Not only does it save the environment, it probably saves about $200 per pack. So it can save as maybe $1,000 just in one theatre episode in terms of that. In terms of the patient outcome for that, it makes no difference because you would only use what you were going to use. But there are other areas where, for example, in pathology, we have in our ICU, we focused on making sure that we only request the tests that are actually necessary. And what I mean by that is you might order a batch of tests. I might order bloods and sugars and a number of other things. And they're just a standard range we order. And if they come back and there's only one that's adverse, often the next day somebody will order the same batch of five. Now we've changed that and actually say, no, these four were okay. It's only this one that was adverse. And we reduced the number of pathology requests by about 34%. Now that also is less inconvenience for patients. So it doesn't necessarily improve their outcome, but it is less inconvenience for patients. We know, for example, that we could use energy more efficiently. It might require a capital investment up front, but actually the benefits to the organization would be financial in the medium to long term. We know that different ways of trying to collect water and use it, if you go to somewhere like Bermuda, for example, it's actually a legislative requirement that every house has the ability to use rainwater in things like flushing of toilets, etc. You're not allowed to build a house without it. Actually, that reduces the cost to the householder, and it actually helps the environment. So I think there are a number of areas where we can make a difference. We know, for example, that something like 6 out of 10 ambulances that bring a patient to a hospital, actually those patients are admitted. Now, I'm not saying 6 out of 10 ambulances are a wasted journey, but actually concentrating on how we look after those patients differently can also reduce the amount of carbon being used by the vehicle, but also maybe be a better outcome for the patient. So I think we just need to think more laterally than maybe we have been in the past.
I think one of the issues too is that when we look at these, very much health services and so forth, Treasury have to look at the short term. So we look at the financial year, we look at the financial year that's coming, and you know, we concentrate on those. The question you ask should be measured over a much longer period of time. So if you said, will there be financial savings in the next year or two, we'd probably say, well, no, because we need to invest in some of the things we've run through. If you said, well, what would it look over a six-year period? We'd say, well, the business cases we'd be putting up, we believe that it would cost in the first couple of years because of the capital cost, but then the energy savings and so forth, the savings of patients not having to wait, all those type of things, we'd break even perhaps in that. But if you look at it longer term, which I believe we have to in this area, then the figures will be markedly different. Mm. The government, of course, has funding constraints. We understand that. We appreciate their help. They've really helped out. I mean, we walked through Fiona Stanley's magnificent, you know, all that type of stuff. So this is not an easy thing. Like, if we could ask you for whole pile of cash, we know that's not possible. So we need to play our part too. But I think one of the things that we're really aware of from our perspective is in areas like this, it's a long time we need to look at. Stuff like resourcing and financial and that type of stuff is typically a short time frame. And one of the issues I imagine the inquiry will be trying to do is to change that so people consider it more. Because as Paul's gone through, and the evidence that you would have seen, of course patient safety is going to be improved. You know, when you look at it all, it's, you know, you can't argue with that. But it's a complex area trying to work out where to invest in the right place in that.
Okay, thank you. That's probably a good place to leave it, I think. Mr. McDonald and Mr. Forden, thank you very much for your attendance at today's hearing. A transcript of the hearing will be sent to you so that you can correct minor factual errors before it is placed on the public record. Please return the transcript within 10 working days at the date of the covering letter or email, otherwise it will be deemed to be correct. While you cannot amend your evidence, if you would like to examine particular points in more detail or present further information, you can provide this as an addition to your submission to the inquiry when you return the transcript. Once again, thank you very much for your evidence today.
Thank you.
Good.
My pleasure.